Want to virtualize your biggest workloads? Bring the performance of cloud computing inside your data center with the only server built from the cloud up.
Hey everybody, welcome back for another episode of TechNet Radio. In this episode, we'll be continuing our series on Hyper-V from a VMware admin's perspective. My name is Keith Mayer. I'm a technical evangelist for private cloud and hybrid cloud solutions at Microsoft. And I have with me today, Andy. Hey Andy, how's it going today?
Good. How you doing, Keith?
Great, great. Hey, welcome back for another episode in our series. We've had a lot of interest around the topics we've been talking about with Hyper-V and live migration and clustering and whatnot. But before we get into those topics today, Andy, why don't we spend just a few minutes so that you can give a brief introduction for yourself and your organization to everyone that we have out listening to us today?
Sure. So my name is Andy Sirwich again. I'm a virtual systems administrator with the Trivalent Group. Trivalent Group is a services provider based in the Grand Rapids, Michigan area. And our primary focus is helping our customers manage, access, protect, and store their data. We're able to do that via a variety of means, whether that's, you know, full-blown on-premise consulting professional services type of engagements, managed services, you know, we'll manage your IT infrastructure for you. And we also offer some ISP and some cloud services as well. So, you know, we do it all.
The full gamut of
supporting
customers on premises with their local data center deployments, as well as doing managed services and hosting of those resources, it sounds like. And I know from our prior conversations and other episodes, you had mentioned that you had started out in the virtualization and private cloud space more on the VMware side years ago, and then as Hyper-V and Windows Server 2012 and now 2012 R2 have come along, you've gained more and more interest in migrating some of your workloads or some of your customer environments over to that platform as well.
Yeah, that's correct. I kind of started out over on the VMware side in the 3.0, 3.5 days. You know, use that for a while because at the time it was the solid hypervisor to use. Now that Hyper-V has kind of come of age and has really matured nicely as a product, we've really started to test that out and start using it in some of our production workloads.
Great. And along the way in our last few episodes, we've talked about some of the ways that built into Hyper-V and Windows Server 2012 and 2012 R2, we can manually manage workloads. We can use live VM migration and live storage migration to dynamically move running workloads back and forth between hosts, whether or not they're in a clustered environment. We talked about clustering more from a high availability standpoint for being able to provide high availability for unplanned outages of hypervisor hosts or whatnot. But as we move forward past those core capabilities, I also see a lot of interest in the IT pros I speak with in putting more intelligence and automation around live migration and high availability clustering to better balance VM workloads across multiple hosts in a cluster. Have you seen a lot of that in your environments, either on the VMware side or on the Hyper-V side?
Yeah, really in both cases. I mean, as the environment grows, you know, whether it's your own on-premise cloud or in our case in our data center and our cloud infrastructure, we've really found the need to be able to dynamically and in an automated fashion move VMs from place to place and, you know, manage the resources in an automated fashion, because as IT pros, you know, time really isn't something we have in abundance. So the more that we can automate and the more we can have the system do for us, the better off we are. So, and, you know, as Trivalent as a services provider, you know, we've got to make sure we maintain our own bottom line so we can continue to do business and provide that good quality of service that we like to provide.
Sure, sure. And on the VMware side, I know the features that a lot of the IT pros I speak with have leveraged in that case have been the distributed resource scheduler capabilities and distributed power management, the DRS and DPM features that VMware makes available in vSphere Enterprise and Enterprise Plus SKUs. However, I've also talked to a lot of IT pros that are, you know, maybe today they're running just vSphere Standard Edition where they don't have access to some of those capabilities. One of the interesting aspects that I've seen in our solution stack is that dynamic workload management like DRS and DPM type capabilities on the Microsoft stack are provided through System Center 2012 R2 VMM. And because VMM, our virtual machine manager component, is cross-platform from a hypervisor standpoint, it allows us to implement those dynamic workload balancing policies across not only Hyper-V clusters, but across VMware clusters and Citrix Zen Server clusters as well. And on the VMware side, since VMM is doing all of the intelligence of dynamically optimizing workloads and power, it doesn't require those more expensive Enterprise or Enterprise Plus versions of vSphere to do that. System Center can manage that, even vSphere Standard Edition clusters on a dynamic basis by leveraging the intelligence in VMM. Have you seen much interest in that space? I know there's a big price delta between Standard Edition and Enterprise Edition on the vSphere side, and it seems like a lot of customers I've talked to have felt like in the VMware world they've been kind of priced out in some cases of leveraging those capabilities.
Yeah, as a reseller, that's a conversation that always comes up when a customer comes to us and says, hey, I'd like to be able to do X, Y, and Z. Well, you're going to have to upgrade to the next tier of licensing. And then cost comes into the conversation at that point. And then also, in regards to SCVMM's capabilities, from a migration standpoint, if you're looking at getting into the Hyper-V space, maybe implementing SCVMM so you can manage both your Hyper-V hosts and your VMware infrastructure. There's kind of a very nice capability list of items that you can do with both hypervisors. So it doesn't make sense really to upgrade to the next tier of vSphere licensing when you can drop SCVMM in place and then eventually make your way over to Hyper-V at your leisure. So it's kind of nice to be able to do that as well.
Sure, yeah, definitely. And when we think about dynamic workload management in System Center 2012 R2 VMM, the capabilities generally fall into three categories. We've got a feature set around intelligent placement, which for new VMs that we're deploying onto our VMM managed private cloud, VMM can give us intelligent recommendations on which host or cluster those new VMs should be placed on initially to help balance out the load initially across the entire cluster of hosts and leverage hosts that have more available capacity for new VMs that we're spinning up. Mm-hmm. And then once those VMs are spun up, we've got two additional features that VMM offers: dynamic optimization for balancing the utilization levels out across CPU, memory, storage utilization, networking utilization across our hosts. And then we've also got power optimization, which allows us to have a more elastic approach to power management and resource management within our data centers, particularly for data centers that are not always operating at full load 24/7. A lot of businesses, once they're outside the normal 9-to-5 business hours, they may need to still have their applications available, but they probably don't have the same user load that they do during the business day. So power optimization allows us to consolidate those workloads down to a smaller number of hosts after hours and then potentially power off some of those unused hosts when we don't really need them to save on power and cooling costs in the data center. And I've seen a lot of interest around power optimization as well because, let's face it, power and cooling and those data center operational costs around servers that you have racked in your data center can, over a period of a couple years, can equal the total cost of the servers that you initially procured them for in some cases. Yep.
Yeah, the power costs of running a data center are just astronomical. Takes a lot of energy to keep those spindles spinning, that's for sure.
Yeah, definitely. Yep. So Andy, what do you say? Does it make sense to drop over into our lab and walk through intelligent placement and dynamic optimization and power optimization with everyone listening in today?
Yeah, sounds good.
Okay, great. Well, I'll meet you over in the lab in a few minutes.
All right.
And hey, Handy, here we are back in our lab environment, and we're currently looking at the management console of System Center 2012 R2 Virtual Machine Manager. And in Virtual Machine Manager, we're on the fabric workspace. You'll notice down in the lower left-hand corner, we've got these different tabs that we can click on to bring up different workspaces. The fabric workspace is where we would go to manage our physical data center infrastructure, virtualization hosts, storage arrays, storage switches, virtual networking, networking gear. And we're going to focus today in our fabric workspace on our servers area, because we're talking about workload balancing across our virtualization hosts. And one of the things that that you'll notice in this fabric workspace initially is that we can group our virtualization hosts into these various host groups. We start off in VMM with a default all hosts group, but we can easily right-click and create additional host groups in a hierarchical fashion. I've got three here for my servers in Columbus and Detroit and in Nashville, but you can create the host groups however it makes sense, whether it's grouping your hosts by data center location, by business units, by mix of applications that are virtualized across those hosts. And effectively, each host ends up being a logical grouping, a resource group of the server resources that are on our virtualization hosts across the CPU, memory capacity, networking bandwidth that's available, and storage capacity that's available. Andy, as your customers set up VMM, do they have an approach that they use for setting up their host groups? Do they normally group them by data center, or are you seeing other ways that they're using host groups in their environments?
I would say in 95% of cases, you see them set up geographically by data center, just like you do here. Trying to think, I want to say we've got one customer that has it grouped by dev and test.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's interesting. Sure.
Yeah, but I think that's the only exception. So it's really nice that you can, you know, just like you can in vCenter a little bit, you've got the option of configuring it how you want to. Now, with that said, I think this is the first time in the series we've shown SCVMM.
Yep.
And when I'm describing SCVMM to customers and coworkers, you know, from a hypervisor managerial standpoint, everyone wants to compare apples to apples with vCenter. And you can't really do that because VMM does so much more in the realm of fabric management. You can manage your storage and your virtual networking. In my opinion, it just does so much more than vCenter does. And you have the added benefit of getting the rest of System Center with it too, which is a really nice perk. So.
yep, definitely. And then in terms of managing our virtualization hosts, as you were mentioning, once we have our host groups defined, into each of these host groups, we can click on Add Resources. And this is another differentiator that I've seen with VMM, where vCenter tends to be focused predominantly around managing VMware virtualization hosts. With VMM, we can manage Hyper-V hosts and clusters. We can manage Citrix Xen server hosts and clusters, or VMware ESX hosts and clusters that are being managed by a vCenter server. So we have this cross-platform virtualization management. So we'd use the Add Resources to bring in our virtualization hosts, and along the way associate those virtualization hosts with a particular host group based on how we're organizing our virtualization hosts. But these host groups themselves can be used to help us allocate and manage our resources, the compute resources that are available across those hosts. When we right-click and drill into the properties of any of those host groups, so in my case, I'll drill into the properties of our all hosts group, you'll see a number of property tabs that we can specify for a host group that then apply to all of the virtualization hosts or child host groups within the host group we're looking at. So any of the properties that I set on the all host group by default will apply down to my Columbus host group, my Detroit host group, my Nashville host group, and all the hosts within that. And then similarly, if I wanted to set specific properties at the Columbus level or the Detroit level that override any of the properties I've set at the all hosts level, I can certainly drill into the properties of those host groups and override those properties as needed. It gives me a lot of flexibility in determining how I apply different types of resource assignments on a group-by-group basis, rather than having to do it on an individual host-by-host basis as we go along. And one of the areas that I initially recommend that IT pros take a look at is an area called host reserves when you're configuring properties of your host groups, because host reserves allow you to set up a reservation for memory, for CPU utilization, for disk I.O. and disk space and network I.O. that you want to make sure is always available to the host itself to prevent having so many virtual machines running on a host that the host itself gets maybe starved for some of the resources that it may need at a host level. And usually what I recommend is reviewing the defaults that are put in place as an initial starting point when you spin up VMM initially in your environment, and then watching over a period of time the level of resources and utilization that you have to determine if you have to modify any of these defaults to give maybe more disk space or less disk space or more memory or CPU to your host as host reserves. Once these host reserves are in place, then what VMM will do is it'll prevent any of the hosts from having so many virtual machines placed on them that they start impinging upon these host reserves that are set up. Andy, do you see other approaches that your customers are using for configuring host reserves in their host groups?
Well, really, as far as our customers go, you know, being VMware doesn't really have anything similar to this, really, it's become a game of very carefully managing the VM resources in relation to what the host has available. What I really like about this in Hyper-V is, as you said it, and your host never really ends up in a situation where there's a lot of resource contention. So it's kind of one of those set it and forget it type of things. And as an IT pro managing this stuff, that's really nice, because anyone who's managed a cluster, we all know, you know, especially on the VMware side, when a host gets really bogged down, that's when you start getting the phone calls, you know, from the associated users and the associated customers of the VMs that are running on that host. So it's definitely nice to be able to utilize this feature in Hyper-V and System Center.
Yeah, no, definitely. And the other nice thing is that once these host reserves are set up, you know, certainly as we mentioned, it reserves a certain amount of capacity for your hosts to make sure that they don't fall into a critical state. But these resource areas, CPU, memory, disk I.O. throughput, disk space that's available, and network I.O. throughput, are the same resource metrics that the intelligent placement routine uses when you're deploying new VMs to help balance the VMs across your hosts, and trying to equalize initial placement for CPU, memory, disk I.O., disk space, and network I.O., while staying away from keeping any host that, you know, that falls below any of these thresholds, so that we don't have any hosts that are in a critical state. And where we see that intelligent placement is when we start provisioning and deploying new VMs. So for a moment here, I'm just going to exit out of our host group properties and switch over in VMM to another workspace, to our VMs and services workspace, where we deploy new VMs or new multi-VM applications. And I'm just going to step through real quick here, creating a new virtual machine, and we'll just do it real quick. We'll create a new VM from a blank virtual hard disk and step through giving our new VM a name so that we can see where the intelligent placement comes into play. So I'll create a new VM, new VM01. We'll make it one of the new Generation 2 VMs that Windows Server 2012 R2 supports for faster virtual disk performance. And I'll go with our default hardware capabilities, and we'll say that we're going to deploy this to maybe one of our Hyper-V, one set of across our Hyper-V hosts, we'll say. And perhaps I also want to make sure that this VM is highly available, so that when the intelligent placement routine is running, not only will it look at equalizing the capacity that's in use across all of our hosts, but by ticking off this box, it'll also make sure that it's only selecting hosts that are part of a Hyper-V host cluster that where high availability can be provided. And I could certainly customize additional resources, but as we specify, you know, placing the virtual machine on a host within one of our host groups, so I'll just select the all hosts group, what's going to happen now is under the on the select host page, that's where that intelligent placement is going to run. It's going to look at the current utilization in place across all of those hosts. It's going to look at CPU, memory, disk space, disk I.O., network capacity, high availability capabilities, whether the machine's part of a cluster or not, and it's going to come back with this 1 to 5 stars rating system. And it'll show the hosts that have the lowest capacity that meet all of the requirements for that particular virtual machine with the highest possible rating. Now, you can certainly override this and go into selecting maybe one of the other hosts if you had a particular need to do so, but it's a nice feature to help guide you when you have lots of virtual machines that are being run across lots of hosts within your environment to guide you to an intelligent selection. In addition, you also have down in your details area additional tabs that you can use for being able to see more details as to why this particular host was selected as the highest rated host as well. So it's a nice way of being able to showcase the choices that you have for deploying new VMs in your environment. Andy, do you see a lot of people using intelligent placement when they're when they're deploying new VMs through a virtual machine manager?
Oh yeah, I use it a lot. Even that's sure. That's one of my favorite little things about SCVMM and Hyper-V. On the VMware side, I've always had to, okay, let me go look at this host. Let me look at the CPU and memory graph. Okay, let's go look at this host, CPU and memory. Where's it sitting at? You know, you kind of always had to figure out on your own which host you wanted to place it on. And this just, it takes all the thought and work out of it, which is really nice. I mean, it just tells me which host is best right off the top. So it's really nice.
Yep, definitely. And beyond the key metrics that intelligent placement has built in around looking at the capabilities that a VM has and then looking at the utilization across hosts, you also have some additional flexibility to be able to customize intelligent placement a little bit further in your environment. If I drill back over to my Fabric workspace and we go back into the properties of our All Hosts group, you'll also see on our All Hosts group this idea of custom properties. And the idea behind custom properties is that it allows a IT pro to create additional custom properties that they may want to use for tagging or organizing hosts, host groups, virtual machine templates to help further control or further guide that intelligent placement routine. For instance, you see here that I've got a property called Cost Center that's created. I just clicked on Create, typed in Cost Center, and then I've associated Cost Center with virtual machines. So I added that in as an assigned property for virtual machines and virtual machine templates and hosts in my environment. What that allows me to do is now that I have this Cost Center property as a custom property, I can also go into my Placement Rules tab at my host groups and add in specific placement rules that look at any of the custom properties that I've defined and then have a requirement that I put in place. So I could have Cost Center maybe as a way of controlling these particular virtualization hosts are being paid for by a particular business unit within my organization, and I only want virtual machines that are running applications for that business unit to be placed on those virtual machine hosts. So I can say, hey, from a placement standpoint, when the intelligent placement routines are running, make sure that the Cost Center property value on a virtual machine that's being deployed from a template matches the Cost Center value on a virtualization host. And if I click OK here, it'll actually block deployment of that virtual machine to a particular virtualization host and exclude it from my intelligent placement selection. It'll give it a 0 stars rating essentially when I'm trying to deploy that, and only allow me to deploy virtual machines to a host that has a matching property value. So it allows me to go a little bit further with customizing intelligent placement more so for my environment. Does that make sense, Andy? Do you see that might be useful in some of your customer environments?
Oh yeah, definitely, because You know, especially when you onboard, in our case, larger customers, they're going to consume more resources. Sometimes a customer wants an entire dedicated host. You know, it just kind of depends on their needs. Having the ability to set custom, you know, custom placement options like this, that's that really helps a lot.
Definitely. The other piece that we have is the idea that once we have virtual machines that are deployed, being able to dynamically balance those virtual machines on an ongoing basis through dynamic optimization and power optimization. And in our host group properties, we have those features also configurable on the dynamic optimization tab. So you'll see when we switch over to dynamic optimization, we have first we have an aggressiveness level that allows us to determine how aggressive do we want dynamic optimization to be. Now keep in mind that the idea behind dynamic optimization is that it's going to watch utilization of your virtualization hosts over time, and it's going to look for hosts that have a heavier load than other hosts, and then if it's going to try to equalize that load across your hosts by live migrating VMs back and forth between hosts. So as we set this aggressiveness level up or down in our scale, what we're telling dynamic optimization to do is look for smaller or bigger gains in order to do that live migration. So if we set the aggressiveness level up to high, it's going to say even if we only have like a 0.1 star rating improvement using that 5-star scale that we saw on the intelligent placement, even if we only have a very little chance for improvement in balancing our workloads, live migrate your VMs back and forth. Whereas the lower settings, they're going to look for more substantial improvements in load balancing between our hosts before they attempt to do a live VM migration between those hosts. What I usually recommend for most IT pros is that you start off at the medium level and see how dynamic optimization is responding at that point. See how well it is at balancing the workload between your hosts, and only change the aggressiveness level up or down if you find that you need to do so because some of your hosts still look like they might be a little bit out of balance, for instance. Does that make sense from your standpoint, Andy, or do you have a different recommendation that you normally have seen be effective?
No, that's my recommendation as well. I think I'm trying to think out of all the clusters I've set up over the last couple of years. I think they've all been set to medium. That's middle of the road. It's just perfect. I found that if you set the aggressiveness too high, then you know if you're trying to manage VMs, they're moving all over the place,
right.
And it's a pain in the rear end. So I found that medium tends to be just about right.
Yep, definitely. And then so we can set our aggressiveness level and then tell dynamic optimization to have a period of time by default every 10 minutes where it looks across CPU, memory, disk, and network utilization across all of the hosts within that host group, and it makes decisions based on the aggressiveness level and based on the current level of resource utilization on whether or not it should automatically migrate, live migrate virtual machines. Now, in order to be considered for live migration to balance out the workloads, we also have some flexibility in being able to define thresholds for each of our key resources. So for CPU, for memory, for disk I/O, and for network I/O, we can define thresholds, and again, we have some default values that once a host starts getting below 30%, in this case by default, utilization of available CPU or about 3 meg of available memory, that's when it's going to start considering that host to have some of its VMs live migrated to lesser utilized hosts. So if the thresholds provide us with another set of metrics that we can use to help constrain how much live migration we're doing. Otherwise, as you said, if we have a higher level of aggressiveness and we had very low thresholds, we might have, or no thresholds, we might have VMs that are constantly moving back and forth between hosts.
No.
Again, for the thresholds, I usually recommend start off with the defaults, see how well that works in your environment for your virtual machines and balancing out your load, and only change them if you find that you have a reason to do so. I've seen lots of IT pros get into trouble by trying to initially second guess the default values without having any experience of watching how it affects the VMs in their environment first. Does that make sense from your standpoint, Andy?
Yeah, you know, my opinion has always been they're defaults for a reason. You know, someone at some point along the development process, you know, did some work and figured out that, you know what, this fits 90% of cases, you know. So I'm of the same methodology, absolutely.
Yep. In fact, I see a lot of IT pros initially setting up the dynamic optimization aggressiveness level and then your various thresholds here, and to see what dynamic optimization is going to do and get a better feel for it. Initially, what they'll do is they'll uncheck this automatically migrate virtual machines. They'll uncheck that and save the settings. And then to get a chance to see how those settings might impact decisions, even if you're not automatically live migrating virtual machines, you can still go down into your host groups, right-click in any cluster, and select the choice to manually use your dynamic optimization settings to optimize hosts. What it'll do is it'll go across your cluster and look for recommendations to optimize VMs across the hosts within that cluster, that if there are any VM recommendations made, it'll show them, and then you can click OK to accept them, or you can always cancel out and ignore those recommendations. But that's a good way of manually being able to test your initial values without having to, right out of the gate, turn on the automatic live migration. Does that make sense? Do you see people that are doing that in your customers, Andy?
Yeah. You know, that's kind of the same thing we did with DRS on the VMware side back in the day too. You know, manually run the DRS so it generates those manual recommendations, just kind of to see what it's going to do before you enable the automatic setting and you know drive down the road. So it's always good to check out what it's going to do prior to you know, leaving the site. So that's definitely best practice to do so, in my opinion.
Yeah, definitely. And once we are comfortable with our dynamic optimization settings and we check the box to automatically have it use those settings to think about live migrating virtual machines on a regular basis to balance out our load, once we enable automatic live migration, we can also turn on that next step that we talked about for power optimization. When we enable power optimization and drill into the settings there, what power optimization allows us to do is to define a schedule. You'll notice the schedule down at the bottom where I can say during my non-production period, so maybe on weekends, on Saturday and Sunday, I want power optimization running. But during the weekdays, Monday through Friday from maybe 8 a.m. to 5 p.m., I don't want power optimization running. I want all of my hosts available. With a schedule like this, what it allows you to do is to say in any of these boxed time periods that are blue, have power optimization look at the utilization of running VMs across all of your hosts within this host group. And if those VMs can be evacuated across any of your hosts to save on power and consolidated on a smaller number of hosts, do so, obeying these power optimization thresholds. You'll see we've got a separate set of thresholds for power optimization during our blue scheduled periods of time here, where as it looks at the hosts, if those hosts can be evacuated to other hosts without causing the remaining nodes that you're migrating everything over to drop below these thresholds, then it'll do that consolidation automatically, live migrate the VMs to a smaller number of hosts, and then actually power down the hosts that are no longer being used during these blue periods of time to save on power and cooling costs. As soon as we come into a prime time, indicated in the schedule by white blocks, where we're not running power optimization, any hosts that were shut down through power optimization will be powered back up, and dynamic optimization will kick back in to balance those VMs out across your hosts again in preparation for production time. Andy, what do you think? Does that make a lot of sense for use in the environments that you've seen for helping to reduce power and cooling costs?
Yeah, I think so. Unfortunately, I haven't seen a lot of our customers really adopt this yet. I'd like to see more of it in use. You know, I think they're either afraid of it, they're not quite sure what it is yet, but especially as your cluster grows and grows and you start getting to be N plus 2, N plus 3 in your cluster, you know, your machines aren't going to be working, you know, they're not going to be working full tooth and nails the whole time. So being able to shut down those physical nodes that aren't really doing anything on those off hours, you can really see some significant cost savings as far as power and cooling goes. So
yeah, definitely.
The bean counter is really like that when you generate some cost savings, and who knows, maybe you get some other equipment out of it that you needed. So yeah, as an IT administrator, it's always nice to reduce costs.
Definitely. One of the aspects that I like about power optimization is that when we start thinking about private clouds and cloud technology in general, one of the aspects of a cloud is the ability to have a level of elasticity of our compute resources, of our overall fabric resources, really. And in a private cloud environment where we're building out cloud computing for hosting VMs and applications in our own on-premises data center. Of course, elasticity is certainly bound by the amount of total physical hosts that we have, but by using power optimization, we can lend some degree of elasticity into our environment by not having to actively keep powered on all of our total capacity when we don't really need all of that total capacity after perhaps after non-production hours, you know, or in the off hours of our work week, for instance. One of the pieces, though, that I see a lot of IT pros ask about with power optimization is, we were talking that power optimization powers on and powers off servers based on the power optimization schedule and the utilization schedule automatically. The way that it does that, it sounds like magic for a lot of IT pros. The way that it does that is it uses baseboard management controllers in your virtualization hosts. So it does expect that in order to use power optimization, any of your virtualization hosts would have a baseboard management controller that at least has remote power on or power off support. Now, the baseboard management controllers are getting more and more common in industry standard servers nowadays, and you'll commonly hear that technology branded by each major server manufacturer. HP servers, for instance, have features that are called Insight Lights Out, ILO features.
Yep.
On Dell servers, they're Dell Remote Access Controllers, Dell DRAC controllers, and on IBM servers, you'll commonly hear them as like RACF controllers, for instance. So it's getting more and more common to have these types of baseboard management controllers and servers. If you do have baseboard management controllers in your servers, one thing that you need to do is you need to tell VMM how to connect to those baseboard management controllers on each of your servers so that you can use power optimization. And where I would do that, I'm just going to cancel out here, is as I'm configuring my hosts, I would go into the properties of each of your virtualization hosts, and under your hardware settings, as you drill down in your host hardware settings, you'll see an advanced category where you've got your baseboard management controller settings that you can specify. So you can say, yes, this physical computer is configured for out-of-band management. The baseboard management controller on the server uses IPMI. We can support IPMI or SMASH protocols, the two common protocols. Here's the IP address for that baseboard management controller, and here's the credentials that I'm going to use. VMM stores them as a run-as account. The credentials that I'm going to use to have VMM automatically authenticate to that baseboard management controller. Once we have those basic properties set up, that gives VMM all of the information it needs to be able to manage powering on and powering off these virtualization hosts as part of your power optimization schedule. Does that make sense, Andy?
Yeah, yeah. You know, you were talking about the baseboard management controllers. As far as them actually being in servers now, I'm trying to think of the last time I ran into a server that didn't at least have the very basic power on, power off functionality. We work with primarily HP and Dell at Trivalent, mm-hmm. and you know, usually right out of the box, you get the real base level features, and if you want the fancier stuff like the console via the ILO or the DRAC. You could pay extra for those, but most of them have that basic power on, power off remote features and capabilities right out of the box these days. I think the only ones that don't are the really low-end servers that you're probably not going to use as a virtualization host anyway.
Right, yep, definitely. Yeah, and even some of those low-end servers, I've seen server manufacturers, as they move forward, starting to integrate at least that basic chipset support right into the system boards of even some of the low-end servers. So you're right, it's becoming much more commonplace nowadays for baseboard management controllers, which is great, because as soon as we have that capability in our virtualization hosts, we can now extend this level of elasticity through power optimization to those hosts. Well, great. Well, let's head back over to the office, and we'll finish up our episode.
Sounds good.
Okay. See you at the office. So, Andy, today in our episode, in our lab, we've been walking through some of the more dynamic features that System Center 2012 R2 Virtual Machine Manager extends to Hyper-V clusters as well as VMware vSphere clusters and Citrix Zen Server clusters. Specifically, we've been talking about intelligent placement for new VM workloads so that we can balance our new VMs across the hosts in our cluster based on the capabilities needed by a VM and the resources that are available across the hosts in our clusters. And we've also looked at dynamic optimization and power optimization as ongoing ways that once our VMs are provisioned, we can continue to help balance the load across our hosts or during off periods of time, leverage power optimization to consolidate our VMs on a smaller number of hosts and then power off some of our unused hosts during off times so that we save on power and cooling costs within our data center. Interesting capabilities that I see more and more IT pros looking at, particularly as more and more of their environment is being virtualized so that they don't always have to manage every single aspect of each of their virtualization hosts on a host-by-host-by-host basis. Are you seeing growing adoption of these features as well for your customers and in your environments, Andy?
Yeah, we're certainly seeing a lot of interest in it. You know, I don't know many IT departments that are growing. Usually it's the opposite, unfortunately. But, you know, the more that we can automate and the more that we can do on the fly, ad hoc, gives IT pros like us more time to get those other issues taken care of. So the benefits are very welcome.
Yeah, definitely. And for everyone listening today, if you guys would like to step through dynamic optimization and power optimization in more detail, down at the bottom of the page today that you're watching this video on, you'll find a link to one of our guided hands-on labs for leveraging dynamic optimization and power optimization with VMM to get better hands-on experience with using those features. Well, Andy, thanks again for joining us today. It's always a pleasure to speak with you, and thanks for providing your insight and expertise in the area of dynamic workload balancing.
Yeah, not a problem. Thanks for having me, Keith.
Sure thing. And thank you, everyone, for joining us today for another episode of TechNet Radio. Look forward to seeing you in a future episode as we continue our series on Hyper-V from a VMware admin's perspective. Thanks, everyone. Look forward to seeing you at an upcoming episode down the road. Have a great rest of your day.
See you, everyone.